Hey guys, welcome to week two of The Wheel. I'm excited to just take you down this journey today. If you're watching online or you're here in the room, we've had an amazing day already. Happy Mother's Day. Carmen mentioned, we dedicated these 25 little babies in here and little kids. It was incredible. And so we had this jam-packed service with all these friends and families, and it's just been a great day. So we're super glad that you're here catching up with us. Please don't hesitate to reach under your seat and grab these notes that are underneath there. We want you to follow along. Take notes of your own with me. These are so that you can remember what we're talking about and engage them. Maybe take them home, stick them in a notebook or a Bible or in your car or something so that you can remember what we're talking about. And when we're talking about the wheel, we're talking about literally in ancient civilizations around the time of Abraham, of the Bible, of the Old Testament, that the wheel was something that was essentially worshipped, that the cosmos and that the people of that time believed that the gods were cyclical in nature and that everything they did revolved around them seeing the world as a cycle, from the way that the stars and the sun moved in the sky to the way that the seasons changed and ultimately to the way that they worshiped God and or the gods, and for them to actually break away from where they lived into worshiping a different god was extremely, extremely unheard of. And to leave a place that had a rhythm that communicated dependability, reliability, consistency, and safety, that to move away from that cycle, whatever that cycle was that they were living in, was totally insane, was totally new, totally dramatic, and represented a huge leap of faith, which Abraham took. And so God went to Abram, and he said, it's time for you to leave this cycle, to leave the place where you are kind of worshiping consistency, and you're worshiping safety, and you're worshiping the known, to follow an unknown God, and to leave the wheel life, and now to go and follow the real living God and move into what is called real life, the life that God designed for you to live. And so every single person stands or sits or waits on a moment for God to say, it's time for you to go forth. It's time for you to leave that way of thinking. It's time for you to leave that pattern that you are continuing to exhibit. It's time for you to make some changes, to look at whatever's cyclical in your life that is something that you do over and over and over again that ultimately takes your focus on the living God and turns it into this kind of wheel, this cycle. Interestingly, I think these people were probably the people group or the people before them that invented the wheel. And so the wheel was something that in their mind, it didn't take them anywhere. It was something that trapped them. It was something that moved around them in the sky, and they worshiped the sun, and they worshiped the moon, and they worshiped animals, and they did all of this stuff because they felt trapped, and they did everything they could to appease the gods and live in this cycle. And so when Abram is called by God, and it says, go forth, leave, and I will give you something. I will change your world. I will provide for you. It was a totally dramatic, once-in-a-lifetime, potentially once-in-a-lifetime experience for humanity. For the living God to go to one man and say to that person who was caught in a cycle of worship, a cycle of appeasing the gods, to go, it's time for you to go, and I'm just going to give you something. I'm going to give you something. And up until this time, the way that the gods were viewed were angry, and that we were supposed to appease them, and people just lived to do whatever they could to make the gods happy. And so for Abram to be called away to a God that says, I'm just going to give you. I'm going to give you a land. I'm going to give you a people. Break free from the cycle. That's what this series is about. It's about you breaking from the wheel life into the real life, the life that God has for you. And after Abram leaves, which is this amazing passage in Genesis chapter 12 where it says, and Abraham went forth, or Abraham left, or Abraham went and moved away. It's an amazing passage that my vision and my heart for everyone that's listening to this, that's watching this, is that your name would be put in that spot, and that whatever this is for you, that thought, that pattern, that belief, that relationship, whatever that is, where God is going, leave, go, I have more for you than being trapped in that rhythm. I have more for you than being trapped in that cycle. I have more for you than just like living in safety. Go forth. That your name, that it would just be said, and Tom went forth, and Jessica went forth, and Rebecca went forth. That as he calls you, that you would believe that the God who made heaven and earth, the living God, is bringing you into what is called real life, and that my heart for you today to understand and to see in this narrative of Abram and the beginning of this nation of Israel that we know something about is that you would see that the living God is a giving God, that his heart is to give, that his nature is to give, that all he wants to do is just to give. He wants to give you a land. He wants to give you a people. He wants to give you a promise. He wants to give you salvation. He wants to give you redemption. And that the living God went to Abram and said, I will give you, I will make a promise. I will do what I said I'm going to do. And the whole narrative is about us seeing the living God juxtaposed to the gods that Abraham was around and probably worshiped before God called him out of Ur. And so ultimately, Abram goes to God as he's on this new journey with this living God. He goes back to God after an amazing encounter that takes place in Egypt. There's a famine in the land, and they've left their town or their city, and there's a famine. So they go to Egypt for safety. And I'm not going to get into the whole story, but ultimately what happens is Abram ends up before the king or Pharaoh, and he ends up defeating the king. He ends up overpowering and leaving the king and leaving Egypt with more material goods, cattle, people, whatever it was, than what he came with. And ultimately, the writer of the book of Genesis is saying, do you see a no one from nowhere named Abraham who I made promises to give all this land, all these people, this promise, this salvation, this future to? Do you see that right away as I call him forth, I put him before a king, and every person would go, there's no way he's going to survive this. But God moves in his life, and Abram leaves. And the writer wants us all to read that as Abram is walking out of Egypt with more than what he showed up with. He wants us to see the living God is a giving God. You can throw all your weight into this God. He will beat your biggest foes. He will defeat your biggest enemies. He will take care, and he will do what he says he's going to do. And ultimately, Abram walks out of that like, I can't believe this. I have more now. He's learning. God is going, I'm a giving God. I'm a giving God. It's just what I do. I just give. I make promises and keep them. And Abram still, because of the nature of worship at that time, goes to God and he says, Sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain possession of this promise? How can I know that I will gain possession? And ultimately, what Abram is asking is this, what do I have to give God to make sure that he gives me what he promised? Abram is living in this cause and effect. If you give, then you get reality. You see, agreements between people during the time of Abraham existed in that way. The way that people made decisions was based upon contractual agreements that had to do with giving and getting. When you think about the way that people make decisions today, when we engage, we live in a world that says, okay, if I'm going to get anything, I have to give. When you're thinking about that shirt that you want, you're thinking, what do I have to pay to get it? When you're thinking about that vacation that I want to go on, you're thinking, what do we have to spend in order to get it? When you're thinking about buying that car, what do I have to give in order to get? And Abram lived in a society, the wheel that he lived in was one that was dramatically about giving to get. Giving to get. And the way that the people engaged each other, because they didn't have police officers, was they would do something extremely dramatic in order to make these agreements come to fruition. So if you had a person that had land and a person that had cattle, what they would do is they would come together and they would say, okay, I want to trade X amount of land for X amount of cattle. And they would say, all right, if you're going to do that, show me how serious you are. Show me how serious you are. And ultimately, if one of the people didn't think that the other person was serious, then they wouldn't do it, because the whole nature of agreements and relationship was based upon this idea. I'll hold up my end of the deal as long as you do, and you need to prove to me right now that you will hold up your end of the deal. So here's what they would do. This is crazy. This is how contracts and agreements were made between people during the time of Abraham. They would come together, land, cattle for the exchange, and they would bring their two best cows. They would get their cows. One party would get their cow, and the other party would get the other cow. And then what they would do is they would cut the cow in half. No real cows were hurt during this demonstration. They would cut the cow in half. Both parties would bring their best cow, cut it in half, and set it across from each other, creating an aisle way. And then both parties would stand at the end of the aisle, and they would walk through the center of these split dead cows. They'd walk through and they would say, if I don't give you what I said I would give, so shall it be unto me, done unto me what was done to these cows. Ultimately, what they were saying is, I am willing to give my best cow. I'm willing to pay a big price, sacrifice blood, my best. And that shows you that I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do. And then the other party would walk through and say, I'll do it too. And ultimately, this was like a blood covenant or a blood connection. This is ultimately where the idea to cut a deal came from. Cut a deal. Hey, you want to cut a deal? You do what you say you're going to do. I'll do what I say I'm going to do. And we'll prove it by giving the blood of our best. When you think about the way that these relationships work, you know, it's not much different than the way we are now. Like we are nervous about making a commitment to something. We want to make sure that we get what we want and pay as little for. And we want to make sure that what we get, man, that it's coming and we've paid for it. Like recently, I bought one of those Casper mattresses. You know, the kind that come in a box that's like this big. And it's like a queen or a full-size mattress. And you open it up and it just... And you're like, whoa. And the whole idea is you can have it for like 100 nights. And if you don't like it, you can send it back. That's really nerve-wracking, because you spend real money on a mattress. And then you're like, I don't know if I like this. And what happened is I sent the thing back because, you know, it just wasn't working for me. I sent the thing back and I didn't get my money back. And I'm like, you cheats, you ripped me off. Like I sent it back. I did the process. The people came and picked it up. I got the email that said that they picked it up, and I didn't get my money back. And I'm just like anyone else going, wait a minute, I did what I'm supposed to do, Casper mattress. Why don't you do what you're supposed to do? Stinking calling cowherd. You sent me astray. You promoted a bad product. I sent them an email. I said, where's the cash refund? They said, oh, we're sorry, there was a glitch. I was like, I'll show you a glitch. I will show you a glitch. We live in this world where it's, hey, if I'm gonna give something, I better get something. And that's the way it was back then. This idea of wanting to kind of get more than we give is personified in children. We have three little children. And this week, my wife, she's a counselor, and this person brought her this box of Gigi's cupcakes. The best cupcakes ever. They're like 4 inches tall. Each one has a different motif. Each one's like its own little city inside of a box. Like you open it up and it's just like, what? It's like Horton Wears a Who in a box. Like, it's just unbelievable. There's like peanuts, and then there's one that's Oreos, and then there's one that's jelly beans, and there's one that's like a tree. And it's just like this amazing thing. You're like, wow. And as we were coming home, she said, there's a rainbow sprinkle one that I know that Redding will like. And so when we got home, we showed it to her. She got home, we showed it to her. It was late. That's your rainbow sprinkle cupcake. She goes, yeah, that's my cupcake. I like rainbow sprinkles. That's all she wants is rainbow sprinkles on ice cream and everything. So we knew that it was hers, and she claimed it. The next morning, Jet woke up first. He's 2 years older, and he saw the rainbow sprinkle cupcake. And he was like, I want that cupcake. And I had to play police, and I'm like, no, you can't have that cupcake. That's Redding's cupcake. And so he got upset. I want that cupcake, but I like rainbow sprinkles. And I'm like, look, there's a tree, there's a house, there's an elephant. Why don't you want one of these other ones? He wanted the rainbow sprinkles. So Redding comes down, and I said, that's Redding's cupcake. Now, if you want to ask her if she'll share with you, then maybe she will. And he just sat there with this look on his face, like, I shouldn't even have to ask. And then I said, Redding, would you share the cupcake with Jet? And she goes, oh, yeah, you can have half. You like like that, don't you? It's like, that is very sweet, Redding. That is very kind of you to share your cupcake with Jet. And I go, so Redding, should I cut it in half? And she goes, yeah, you cut it in half and give half to him. I said, man, that is so sweet. What a good girl. She goes, because I like to share. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I didn't teach you that, but that's great. Like, it's like she loves to share it. So then I take the other half of the cupcake. I put it on Jet's plate right in front of him. And he has this look on his face. And he literally, I am not exaggerating much. He starts crying tears down his face. And he says, if she really loved me, she would give me the whole thing. And I was like, what? This is like you're in reverse. You're not understanding the way deals work, man. Like, she didn't have to give you any. She gave you half, and you're looking a gift horse in the mouth. What is wrong with you? I started, like, explain and police this the way the transactions work. And it's like, this is the way we are as humans, isn't it? We want to get as much as we can without having to give. And we want to understand what we have to give in order to get. And you see, the way that relationships worked between people was just that. You better show you're serious. You better dive in and prove that you're going to give me what you say you're going to give me, or this is going to go bad. Ultimately, that idea of the cow being split in half was saying, you can kill me if I don't do what I said I'm going to do. I will give and you will give, and that's the deal, man. That's serious. And ultimately, it just was taken to another step during the time of Abraham of how relationships with the gods worked. It's the same thing. You give your best. This was the idea, and hope that God gives his best. You give your best. And so what the people during this time, this season of humanity would do is they believed that the gods controlled the weather, the temperature, rains, and the harvest. And so they would sacrifice things to the harvest and to God and to the sun and the moon god. And so just imagine the insanity of this type of system of engaging with a god. You think, okay, if we are going to get the rain so that we can survive and we can have the crops yielded the way that they're supposed to, then we better take our best crops and offer them up to God and burn them. And that's what they would do. And the family would come around, they'd bring the best crops, and they would burn them. And just imagine, they burn the best crops. And this, I'm sure, happened all the time because they didn't know what they were doing. They just were worshiping. They were just trial and error worshiping different gods. So they sacrifice all this crop, and then it goes up to the sky, and then for 3 weeks it doesn't rain. They're thinking, he's mad. We didn't give enough. We obviously didn't give enough because he's not giving back. So then they would move from their crops to their best animal, and they would sacrifice their animal, and they would set the animal on fire. And just imagine you set your best animal, and it's like you got the cows, and it's like, we're going to sacrifice a cow. And one of the kids is like, not Zeke, because they named the cows. Not Zeke. Yeah, we got to sacrifice Zeke. Yesterday I was at a petting zoo, and one of the cows' name was Zeke. And I'm just thinking, like, poor Zeke. Like, Zeke gets sacrificed. And just imagine all the family standing around watching the sacrifice, hoping that we're giving to the gods what we need so that we can get food to live. And imagine that it doesn't rain. Imagine that it doesn't yield. Oh, we got to give more. This is where child sacrifice in ancient religions and different cultures started. We've got to give to the gods in order to get. And so they would often, they're just the tragedy, take a child. Burn a child, and imagine how insane, imagine the horrible thinking and the reinforced bad divine understanding of reality when you sacrifice then the child, and then the rains come. And you think, man, in order for us to appease the gods, we got to give a lot. In order for us to do this, we got to give so much. Abraham, when he goes to God, and he's already had a little bit of an experience of beating the king in Egypt, he then goes to God because he's still trying to understand, and he lives in this culture of you better give your best to God in order to get your promises, in order to get your survival. That's where this question looks a lot different when you read it this way. When he says, Sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain? In other words, what do I have to give you? I will give you something in order to know that you're going to get my promises. And then God does something beautiful in a passage that you may have read before. And if you haven't read it, you should go read it. he basically enters into the contractual nature of the way things were done between people with Abraham. And this is the passage. It's amazing. In Genesis 15, so the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer. There you go, right? It's the way really Abraham's going, okay, this is going to be just like normal. I'm going to go get a cow. Bring me a heifer and a goat and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and young pigeons. Abraham brought all these to him, and then he does what? Cuts them in half. God didn't say cut them in half. He just cuts them in half because Abraham comes from a culture that this is what you do if you are going to engage in a contractual relationship with someone where you're going to get something if you give. So he goes ahead and he cuts the animals in half and he arranges the two sides opposite each other. And he's like, okay, we're about to make a covenant. I've just said I'm serious about this. I've given you something. What do I have to do to make sure that all of this happens? And all of this makes sense up until this point, where God changes it and shows how different he is than anything Abraham has ever experienced. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Ultimately, God put Abraham to sleep off to the side. So Abraham falls asleep. And then it says this, when the sun had set and the darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with the blazing torch appeared and passed between the two pieces. For the ancients, they believed that God was represented in fire and in torches. And so God shows up. He puts Abraham to sleep. And he walks through the two halves in this symbolic fashion, representing what they would have thought and would have believed God to be like. And on that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said to your descendants, what? I give this land. From the Wadi of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates. In one fell swoop, God moves in and says, everything you thought about God is wrong. You don't have to walk through these pieces. You don't have to hold up your end of the deal. I am the living God, and I am a giving God. And I will give to you, to your descendants, this promise. I am making what we know now in church a covenant with you, which is a living God saying, I'm going to give to people, and I am going to hold up both ends of the deal. You see, I usually do this message, I've done it before, at weddings. Because what this picture is a picture of perfect relationship. When two people come together and say, I will walk down the aisle, but me walking down the aisle is not me saying, I'm only going to do if you do. Me walking down the aisle is me representing a love that says, I will hold up both ends of the deal regardless of what you do. Ultimately, it's a picture of God's love. It's saying, I'm going to do everything I said I'm going to do. When you are faithless, I will be faithful. When you run away, I will run towards you. When you don't give, I will continue to give. When you hurt me, I will forgive you. And if two people show up to a relationship with this idea, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter. I forgive you beforehand. I love you beforehand. I'm going to give you my life. It doesn't matter what you do. I'm making a covenant, not 50-50, not I give, you get, and vice versa, a covenant. And we are all constantly sucked into this idea that we have got to give in order for God to give back. And here's the thing about what God is giving you, is he is giving you his promise. And his promise is big and bold, and it is steadfast, and it will never go away. And I want you to think about this. God promised Abraham a place, a piece of land. God promised Abraham a people group. God promised him salvation through that. Abraham is wondering, what is going to become of me, and how do I make sure that that happens? But ultimately, Abram did not even get to see the fruition of his people in their land. He did not get to see the promised Messiah. You see, God's promises are bigger than your life and my life, but we get to step into them. And when he promises hope to all those that call upon him, you better believe you get hope. It's his promise. When he says he forgives, if you lean into his forgiveness, it's a promise. It doesn't matter. You get it. You see, what we want from God is we want an exchange. And what it is we disregard oftentimes the promises of God and look for the perfect life. God, will you give me this? Will you do this? This relationship, this money, this house, these specific things. And God's going, I did not promise you to have this beautiful, perfect life where everything works together. So many Christians go to God like a genie in a bottle. God, will you please do this for me? He's going, if you just read and you just look at what I promised you, lean into that. Because you will get it every time. And instead of looking at the world through, man, what I don't have, look at the promises of God. Hope, forgiveness, restoration, freedom, redemption, joy. He's a God of the promised life, not the perfect life. Don't buy into a faith that says, if you buy into God, he will make everything perfect. Buy into a God that makes big promises, always keeps them, and then base your entire life on them. Your entire life on the promises of God. He says he's going to do something, you can take it to the bank that he is going to do it. When he said he was going to give his son, he gave his son. He didn't do it in the timing that he wanted, that we wanted. He did it at the perfect time, not your perfect time. We get sucked into believing that our engagement with God is based upon our performance. And if we just started to wade into the promises of God, God is who he says he is. He's going to do what he says he's going to do. He will provide hope. He will provide joy. He will be loving and caring, and he will wipe away our tears, and he will restore us, and he will resurrect all people from the dead. Our relationship with God is not based upon our performance. It's based upon his promise. He has a promise, and you have to figure out what it is. And when you look at what it is, your game, your life, everything changes. And we think, if I didn't do the right thing, Abram, he went to Egypt and he lied about his wife. Abram, he totally messed up multiple times. He slept with another woman in order to try to provoke or invoke the promise of having an offspring. And God still blessed him. He said, no, you cannot, with your lack of performance, with your broke down understanding of who I am, get in the way of the promises of God. No man, no woman can stop God's plan. I'm sorry, I had to make it rhyme. No man can stop God's plan. You know why? Because in his nature, the nature of God is to give. The living God is a giving God. It's his nature. He gives. He gave everything we have. He gave us our breath. He gives us more on top of that. The scripture said that he has blessed us in the heavenly realms with every spiritual blessing. He just gives and lavishes, and we get caught up in what we don't have as opposed to the promise. And here's the thing that I want to end with. I want to bring us to this place is that every single one of us, regardless of understanding the nature of God, if you grew up in the church and you understand the promises of God, if you're new here and you're like, well, what are the promises? I want to tell you about the main promise that you can lean into. And I want you to just understand that what you wrestle with in terms of God, in terms of give, receive, and what do I have to give in order to get, every person, even those that faithfully follow Jesus, are constantly tempted into believing that we must earn God's promises. We are constantly drawn into that. We constantly fail. We constantly feel shame. We constantly feel like, what do I have to do to re-up the ante? What do I have to do to reset the stage? What do I have to do to make God okay with me or forgive me? We're all sucked into that vortex of a lie. We're all sucked into that wheel. Okay, I've got to go back and give to him. Otherwise, he's going to be mad. I got to appease him. I better sacrifice more. If I don't bring my best, he won't give his best. And God says, you don't understand me. All I do is give my best and offer it to you. And when you get that, the game changes. The game changes. And what God is doing is he's taking Abram on a journey of understanding that the living God is a giving God. And his biggest moment, the climax of God's lesson, the climax of God's teaching to Abram is with Isaac. That's this last thing he does to communicate how giving he is. You know this story. He can't have a child. And then God does bless him with a child named Isaac. And they name him Isaac because they're laughing. Do you know why they're laughing? They're laughing that he's born because they can't believe that a 90-year-old man and his 90-year-old motherless woman could have a child. They're laughing because God gives. They're laughing. They're like, the living God is a giving God. This makes no sense. We didn't earn this. Our bodies shouldn't be doing this. And he still gives. So what happens in this story is amazing. God then, after giving Isaac, goes to Abram and puts him in one more test to teach him this simple principle. He says to him, go and take your son, Isaac, the one I promised to you, and sacrifice him. And if you read the story and you think, oh, he's just faithful. He just does it. Because the scriptures say that he just takes Isaac and just starts heading towards the mountain. That's not because he has this faith in God. That's because Abram still doesn't believe that God is a giving, benevolent God that will always keep his promises. Abram gets sucked back into thinking, well, I better do what God says. I better sacrifice a child. That's the backdrop for the Isaac story. It's not, oh man, God just made up this crazy thing that shows how good God is. God is teaching Abram. He's saying, I want to show you how the things of the world you came from work and how I work. So go and take your son and sacrifice him. And immediately Abram thinks, okay, I'm going to have to give my best in order to appease God. So he takes his son up to the top of a mountain, which is what they did in ancient cultures to get as close to the gods while they were worshiping. And he takes his son, and he begins, after he's bound, to take a knife to sacrifice his son, and God speaks out and says, stop, don't, Abram, don't. And Abram stops. And immediately, the scriptures say that just off to the side, that God had placed a ram caught in a bush. In the scriptures, it says a ram caught in a thicket. I don't know what a thicket is, but that's a cool word. It's a ram caught in a thicket. His horns are twisted up in some branches. And so Abram, in that moment, goes and gets the ram and sacrifices the ram instead of his son. And then Abram names that mountain God provides. In other words, Abram says and gets his final lesson. The living God is a giving God. I thought he was going to make me give my best in order to appease him. And instead, in the moment of sacrifice, God shows up again and provides more. He gives. He says, here's the ram. Here is the ram of God. I will provide for you. You don't have to appease me. I love you, and I have a promise for you. And there it is in the ram of God. And on that same mountain, it is believed, thousands of years later, that God fulfilled the promise. And we often believe when we think of that story that the archetype or that the visual or that the metaphor of Abraham and Isaac is that it's God who would be willing to sacrifice his son in order that we wouldn't die. But in that picture, that is not, God is not, or Jesus is not Abraham and Jesus is not Isaac. Jesus is the ram. He's the one who provides. He's the one who gives. He's the one who hung on a cross and said, while you were sinners, I died for you. God made a promise to your father, Abraham, to give you land, to give you a people, and to provide redemption, the forgiveness of your sins, just because of one truth that we're all still trying to figure out. The living God is a giving God. And so today, can you move away from this? Oh God, what do I have to give? That's the real life, man. The real life is to understand that you have an opportunity to engage with a God who all he wants to do is lavishly, benevolently pour out his blessings on you. the Ram of God who provides for all of us. You have to lean in to those promises. And when we think about Jesus, we think about the promises that he made. Jesus said this, he said, I will be with you, to his disciples. He promised the Holy Spirit. He promised to build his church on the confession of Jesus Christ. You have to lean into what he says his promises are and not this perfect idea. And you have to receive them just because God is giving, not because you and I did something for it. And so today is a day of reception. It's a day of just believing. It's a day of just going, okay, God, we believe in you. You love us. You died for us. You give us these promises. And so if you've never embraced Jesus Christ, he hangs on a cross and then raises from the dead to say to you, you can receive eternal life if you just believe in me. And so would you just pray with me? I want to lead you in just a moment. God, if there's anybody in here that doesn't have a relationship with you, I pray that right now they would put their faith in you. Not because they've done something or they're here and they've earned it, but simply just because they see you. God, they just see you right now. They're just looking at God. And you just look different today, God. You just look benevolent and you look beautiful and you look generous. And I just pray that the people in here that don't know you would open up their hearts and open up their hands and just say, okay, I receive. You're a giving God, I receive. I receive salvation. I receive forgiveness of my sins. I receive adoption into your family. I receive hope. I receive joy. Just give it to me, God. If that's what you are, just give it to me. Help us not to be prideful people who won't embrace the gift of God. When we struggle, God, with people being generous to us, it's just there's a sign in there that's a pride that we don't understand how generous you are. Help us to stop fighting for ourselves and doing what we think we have to do to make you happy, and help us to see us as you see us, as a father who loves his children and wants to give. Help us not to think that if we're disciplined or if there are hard times, that somehow, you know, cancels out your goodness and your generosity. Help us to see that a father who loves his kids disciplines his kids, and that hard times can show us our need for you, and that it can grow into this continued celebration of your love. Help us to understand the wounds and the brokenness as a way for you to get a hold of us and receive what you have for us. Father, you are the living God. You breathe life into this world. You breathe life into my lungs. You've given us everything and more that we could possibly need or fathom. Father, I want to ask for forgiveness for asking you for more, for asking you to do things that I think you should do to finally be a promise-keeping God. And help me just to look at who you are and what you've done and to find satisfaction and relief in the goodness of your promises. Help every person in here to stop looking at their performance and perfection and look at the promises of God, and help us to just receive your goodness. Father, we worship you. We thank you for your love. In Jesus' name. Amen.